All right, Strongpreneur Nation. Today I'm excited to let you listen in on a conversation I had with a good buddy of mine out on the East Coast, out in the beautiful state of Rhode Island, named Tom Lapatowski. He is the owner of a 30-person plus painting business called Lopco Contracting. And he is a great guy doing amazing things in his community, building relationships, and really establishing himself as the go-to expert in the painting and restoration trade in the Rhode Island area, Providence area. So check this out, listen to us, and put one thing into action that you learned from him, okay? Just he gave us a lot of good stuff here today. So hopefully you'll take one thing that you learned and put it into practice and build an uncommon contracting business. Without further ado, here's Tom and Tom. Hey, did you know that you can see my pretty mug on YouTube? Huh? Yeah, you can. You can head over to YouTube and type into the search bar, Tom Reber. T-O-M-R-E-B-E-R. You could also go to YouTube and type in Motor One Hard and search me there. My guess is that you can just type my name in and figure it out, because people who listen to this know how to work YouTube generally. So head over to YouTube, where we talk about how you can make more money as a contractor. We talk about leadership and motivational stuff, marketing strategies, business ideas for you, and things like that, just to help you grow a stronger business. So if you want to get a little more of what you get here on the podcast, head over to the YouTube channel and subscribe today. And also, you know, reply. Send me an email, tom@motorhard.com, or reply to any of the videos and stuff there. And let me know what you would like more content around, what topics, what questions you have. And we'll do our best to bring in the experts and have the conversations that it's going to take to help you get all your needs met. All right. Hope to see you over there. All right. So, Tom, it's awesome to have you here today, man. How you doing?
Beautiful, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. What's it doing in Rhode Island on May 1st? No, May 2nd. May 2nd, right?
May 2nd.
It is May 1st. Wow, man. I'm like totally off. All right.
All right.
So what's it like out there today?
It's not the best weather today. It started off okay, but then we had a bit of rain moving in. So it's not unusual for this time of year to not know what you're going to be up against weather-wise. But as they say, around these parts in New England, if you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes and something else will happen.
That's right, man. Well, are you a Patriots fan?
I'll tell you what. I'm not. I'm a pretty neutral football fan.
All right.
But I'm a huge Bill Belichick fan because of how he's wired, what he does, the systems that he puts in place. So that's kind of a double-edged question there.
All right. Well, that's fair, man. He's definitely got his act together when it comes to running an organization, coaching a team, and all that stuff. So, and all you other people that hate the Patriots right now are going, yeah, it's good if you know how to cheat and all that other stuff. So whatever. So, hey, before we dig in and talk about the contracting world, you made a big announcement on your Facebook page last week that's probably pretty unique for a guy who owns a contracting business like you. Why don't you tell us about that, man?
Sure. Now, I appreciate you bringing that up. Basically, our company, as you know, is a pretty good-sized contracting company. We have about 30 employees, and as most areas of the country go this time of year, we're really ramping up. Everything's really crazy with estimates and production stuff, et cetera. My daughter has been doing competitive cheerleading for several years now, and she had belonged to a program that had become very successful within recent times, but due to a wide variety of factors, the gym that she has been a part of and known near and dear to her heart had to close down, or was forced into closing down within the last week or so. And all these kids that had banded together and had really grown close as tight as family over a number of years in some cases, all of a sudden didn't have a home to really call their own. Mm-hmm. And as with these types of things in life, if you don't act fast, these kids are going to scatter all over the place and end up at different gyms, and who knows if they really ever see each other again. So upon this happening, I reached out to another coach on our team, a coach that in my exposure over the last few years to offside cheerleading, I look at as good, if not the best coach I've ever come across, who really connects with the kids, really cares for them. I can't speak enough about her. And although from a business standpoint, I'm fairly philosophically opposed to partnerships, I approached her in terms of partnering up and starting this all-star chair gym. And she was pretty much of the right mindset of me. She kind of contrasts me very well with the areas that I need help in, and vice versa, I believe. And all of a sudden, we become an owner of a chair gym together pretty much overnight, in the interest of keeping all these girls together and really building a program that gives all-star cheerleading people in the community, I should say, that maybe normally, ordinarily, wouldn't have access to this type of athletic team environment, more access to it. And we're both on the same page with this. We both have similar whys, and it's kind of this big, exciting thing that's happening that really just it came out of nowhere.
So did you ever imagine that you would be an owner in a cheer gym?
Are you kidding me?
Well, that's pretty cool, man. That's cool. And the reason I bring it up is, you know, we talk a lot on the show here about being uncommon contractors, and you've managed to build the type of business and life that allows you, you know, not that you're not busy and, you know, burning the candle at both ends on occasion, but you still have, you've built a business and a life that allows you to be involved in your, you know, family and do things and have some free time and actually have a life outside of the business. So hopefully for those contractors that are listening to this, they can be inspired to do whatever it takes to set themselves up to be able to, you know, follow their passions and spend time with their family and all that other stuff, man. So good luck with that. I know I know you'll kick butt with it if you bring half of what you've brought to your painting business, man. So I look forward to seeing what you do with that. And you know, you're probably going to be on like ESPN or something someday being interviewed, you know, about how you built this, you know, world renowned,
you know me very well, Tom.
That's right, man. So yeah, you'll find a way to get on there, man. I know you. So tell us a little bit about you and, you know, a little background, how you ended up a contractor, all that good stuff.
Sure. I started off in the business, I'd say I was 18 years old, which in Rhode Island, that's the age that you have to be in order to get your contractor registration in the state. And backing up a little bit before that, the summer after I got out of high school, I remember driving down on a hot summer day, guys painting a big old school New England triple decker, and looking at them and saying, man, there's one thing I never, ever, ever, ever want to do in my life. It's being those guys painting that triple decker in the middle of hot sun in the middle of July. Now, fast forward a year later, what am I doing? I'm painting a triple decker in the hot sun in the middle of July. And it really wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be as I jumped into it. And the reason why I got into the business was I grew up in a part of the state that's pretty economically challenged, and I grew up with some siblings, two brothers and a sister, and we all had intended of going to school after high school, and I knew that if that was going to happen, I was going to have to pay for it on my own and kind of figure out a way to do it. And I saw some people running the painting company that day in that July years ago, and I thought more and more about it after I saw them doing it, and I kind of got a little bit inquisitive about it, looked into it, and kind of got my information together, what I had to do to start that particular type of business. Even though I had never seen a paintbrush before, I decided to start a painting company. You know, I joked, you mentioned the cheerleading thing. And although I've been watching these incredible athletes perform for the last several years, I stare and watch them do all these amazing routines. I still don't know really what the heck is going on. But the joke was that even though that's the case, I still know more about cheerleading than I did about painting when we first started with the painting business. And that's turned out okay.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So what did you, when you were a young kid, like looking forward to growing up and stuff, what did you think you were going to be?
A football player. No question in my mind. I played football throughout high school, I always had a dream about playing in the SEC. And when I got out of high school, I actually went down south on a whim, got into the University of South Carolina, walked on the team down there. And in the process of that happening, my mother ended up passing away. Disease called CJD, which is Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. It's a one in a million disease. Like, nobody gets this thing, you know, and it kind of affects the nervous system. And once you have it from onset of symptoms, 4 to 6 months is all you have.
Wow.
I mentioned my siblings who are all younger. When that happened, made the decision to transfer up north and keep kind of building the painting business. I transferred to a college here that was Bryant College at the time, now Bryant University, that was in the process of getting a football program together. And I was with the team for a little bit there, but because of the direction the program was going at the time, I didn't believe it was the right fit. And I ended up leaving the program, still went through school, but ended up playing minor league football for 9 years after that. And it was a great run. But I really gravitated more towards the painting and contracting business, as my body told me my time in football was my window was kind of closing on me there.
There you go, man. Well, yeah, none of us, what is it? What do they say? Father Time is undefeated.
So. Is this true?
That's right, man. So tell us about the business. You know, when did it start? How long have you been doing this thing? You know, where are you at now? All that good stuff before we kind of get into how you got there.
Sure. I've been in business for 22 years. We started in the early to mid 90s. And we started, as I mentioned, as a way to kind of pay my way through school. And, you know, we went through it, building the business a little bit as I went through school and kind of come to this cross in the road. As we're graduating, I have to decide whether – this fork in the road, I should say. As I'm graduating, had to decide whether I was going to, you know, keep building the business, keep rolling with it, or if it was something or a point in time where I should be going to get a job with some big company somewhere. So the more I thought about it, I said I could always try to get a job with some big company somewhere. Let me just try to run with this painting and contracting business and see what happens. And the rest is history, as we say. We started not only excelling in the painting end of the business, but we saw an opportunity to get involved in the repair side as well. And that's something that has been building for quite a number of years, and kind of to the point that we're at today, where we run a pretty good size operation. As I mentioned, we got 30 people out there in the field, and we're rocking and rolling.
Well, that's pretty cool, man. And so, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was you've got a pretty unique strategy around how you market your business. And I think you do some things in the community and stuff that are really unique and that are worth, you know, our audience hearing, because a lot of contractors, quite honestly, you know, this struggle with getting the phone to ring and having consistent lead flow. You know, I'd say leads and then finding people. Those are usually the two biggest issues, right? And, you know, I typically see guys that want to, they think marketing's like this easy button, or like it's this this thing that, okay, now the marketing's set, now I move on to other things, you know? Mm-hmm. So yes. Could you share a little bit about just your approach to how you market your business and, you know, things like that?
Sure. Yeah, I'll give you a bit of information in a nutshell, but I'm going to make it as valuable as possible for whoever may be able to get some tidbits from it.
Cool.
I would say the first thing before you even delve into marketing is you really have to make sure your sales process is nailed down. If you don't have a sales process that's proven, that's really going to work best of that anything could possibly do in terms of landing business for you, then don't even worry about the marketing side. That your sales process has to get corrected before you delve into marketing. Is that something that you find too, Tom?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what good is it to get 100 leads if you can't sell jobs to the right clients, you know? So
exactly.
Nothing happens without a sale. So yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. So my first advice would be to whatever that means, and it means something different for everybody, make sure that you have a sales process in place that's going to do for you what you want it to do. Mm-hmm. Assuming that's in place, then you could start getting into a lot of the different types of marketing that we do. Two things that we really shoot at in terms of our marketing initiatives are, one, we market the heck out of existing clients and colleagues and relationships. And the other thing that we do is we go after new clients and relationships. Mm-hmm. In terms of existing clients, two things that you can do that we found to be highly valuable. One, it's real simple. It's a monthly newsletter. And ours, we try to make as fun as possible every month. Even if it's not necessarily designed quite like ours, if it's totally, say it's the most mundane newsletter that you've ever seen in your life, still get it out there, you know, because one is better than none. You want to reach out and touch your clients out of sight, out of mind. I mean, even like this is, I think, in our business, one of the things that gets kind of thrown by the wayside all too often, because people mm-hmm. think we have a lot of one and done clients. When that's not the case, and that's not the point of staying in touch with them. I mean, you might paint the inside of the house this year, but next year they may want the inside of the house done, or a bathroom, or they're always getting asked or in the opportunity to possibly get a referral to you. So out of sight, out of mind, by sending a monthly newsletter, I encourage you to either make it as entertaining as possible as you can on your own, or if you need to reach out to somebody to help you out with it, I encourage you to do that too, but just get it out there. Even if you just start off sending it once every 2 months or something, we send ours monthly.
Yeah.
But even if you're just sending it once every 2 months, you got to get it out there. That's my piece of advice there.
So I remember on that note, I remember years ago, back when I was in the Chicago area building our painting company back there, you know, we had painted several parts of this woman's interior. Her name was Carol. We painted four or five times there over a few years.
Yeah.
Super happy customer, referred us to everybody, you know, and all this other stuff. And I remember one day driving down her street and I saw my biggest competitor painting her exterior.
Didn't that get you in the stomach?
Oh man. And I pulled over and I called her and I'm like, "Hey Carol, it's Tom. What's going on?" She's like, "Hey, how you doing?" She was all happy and this and that. I said, "Hey, listen, I'm just trying to figure out if I did something to tick you off or whatever. Did we do something wrong?" She goes, "No, what are you talking about?" I said, "Well, you got Bob painting your exterior." And she goes, "Oh, I didn't know you painted outside too."
Is that crazy? Yeah.
You know, and how many times have we been in that house and all this? Well, at the time, I was doing virtually no marketing to my past customer list.
Yeah.
And so, so like you said, out of sight, out of mind. And this and that. So tell me about when you send. Let's just talk about this mailer thing that you send out right now. Who's on the list? Who does it go to? I know you said it goes out every month and things like that. But do you mail it just to past customers? Do you mail it to everybody in your database? What does that look like?
Right now, this particular newsletter that I'm talking about, it goes out to previous customers, family and friends, mm-hmm. Colleagues. People that, in other words, that I built up a relationship with over a period of time from a networking standpoint, and something that we just started sending to, because our sales process is a bit extensive, it also goes out to the people that have entered into the last room, for lack of a better term, of our sales process portal without actually signing the line which is dotted. Because with regard to our sales process, that last part before they signed, they've been ultra qualified up until that point. And it's just like, you know, so we've decided to start sending them the monthly newsletter as well.
So that'd be somebody that, you know, might have gotten a bid from you a month ago, a couple months ago, you know, it's a big restoration type project or something, you know, several thousand dollars, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. And then you put them on that list so that while they're still in that, you know, on the fence about what they're going to do, who they're going to hire, that lands in their mailbox and boom.
Yep. A little bit, I'd say pretty much, but there's a little bit more to it.
Okay.
This is somebody that has reached out to us for information regarding the project, that has filled out a 20 question questionnaire and submitted it to our office. that has had a half-hour phone consultation with us, that has had us on-site for a paid on-site visit with us, breaking down the project to them and getting all the information from to them, combined with everything you just mentioned, and just for whatever reason or another, has not signed on the line, which is dotted and given us a check yet.
Gotcha. All right, so timeout. We're calling a timeout. Boom, timeout. You just said something a minute ago that most contractors might not have picked up on. You said paid consultation. You can't do that, man. You're a contractor. You're supposed to run out there for free.
I could do anything, Tom.
Come on, man. Tell us about that. Come on. No way. Well, you don't charge for estimates.
Yeah, no, you have to. I mean, if you're not incorporating that into your sales process, you're missing a whole lot of personal time that you could be gaining by eliminating a whole bunch of tire kickers before you get all run around all over the place to it. It's got to be incorporated in the right way, but I'm a firm believer in a consultation fee. And the biggest reason was because of how you led into that question when nobody else has done it. So there's a wise man, his name was Earl Nightingale. He once said, if you want to really, really be successful in whatever it is that you're doing, pay attention to what everybody else you know in that segment is doing, and then do the opposite. So in our industry, as you mentioned, contractors are so afraid for whatever reason of charging a consultation fee. It's funny to me. And if you present it in the right light with amongst your sales process, you're going to be kind of allowing the cream to rise to the top, as they say, and make your life a whole heck of a lot easier.
So what kind of resistance do you get from customers? Because I talk to guys and they're like, oh, I bring it up and people are like, well, no one else is charging it. And, you know, they don't pay it and they don't have them come out. So how do you handle it?
That's beautiful. That's what you want me to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way we get it is we have two portals or two ways that you can kind of request an estimate, either calling our office or you could request it through the website. And either way, they're introduced to our process right off the bat. So right from the initial contact with us, whether it's through the website, through an email, or from somebody in our office explaining it to them, they know that if it gets to that point in time, that there's going to be a consultation fee involved. But before we even get there, they're going to have to do a little bit of work. They're going to have to get us a questionnaire answered that tells us a bit about the project. And then we're going to set up a time for them to talk to us on the phone for about a half hour that we can review the questionnaire and the project with them and give them an idea generally of what it's going to cost to do work with us. Now, they don't have to have us come out to the house to get a ballpark on what it costs for the project.
Right.
They don't have to do that at all. We could do that over the phone. And that part's completely free. We don't charge them for that. But if they want us to actually come out there to get them, you know, the full spec sheet on the job and the information that goes along with it, that's when you know they're a little bit more serious, and that comes later on in the process. So as long as you can have them pay attention to your process as it's getting explained to them, they'll figure at that point in time whether it's the correct fit for them to keep talking to your company or not. And if not, there's no worries at all. I mean, there's plenty of people out there, assuming that you're doing the marketing end of things the right way, you're going to get into the funnel that even if they are a little bit resistant at first, as they get more and more involved within your sales process, they're going to realize how different you are from every other contractor they're talking to. And they're going to be much more receptive to paying the fee, and most of them won't even think much about it. The other thing we do emphasize with them is that if they do go ahead with us for the project, we just credit the consultation fee off the total cost of the project, whatever it is that they want us to do.
That's awesome. And you know where I stand on this thing. I think contractors should be charging, you know, for their time and all this other stuff. But before we can charge for that consultation, we have to get the phone to ring. We have to, you know, have somebody fill out a form on our website. And so let's talk a little bit about the roots you've planted in your community.
Sure.
I mean, you're like Humanitarian of the Year. You've got, every time I turn around, you're doing some sort of community event. When did that start? When did the light go on for you to get involved in that way? Where's that all come from?
Well, I mentioned the section of Rhode Island where I grew up in. And I saw a very challenged community for a long time as I was growing up and heading into my adult years. And I always said to myself that if we were ever as a business in the position to give back to the community and help out in whatever way we could, I really kind of made a pact with myself to do that. And as we went along in business and our situation improved and our networks improved, we were able to kind of realize that. And it is kind of like there's a number of reasons why we do it. You know, one, and these have kind of come into my head as time's gone by and we've become more and more involved. And I could probably review them now, and it'll mm-hmm. make a lot more sense as I do that. I mean, one reason you do it and why we originally do it was because of the actual project itself. I'll use an example of a cleanup that we just had last weekend in the area along a bike path that runs along a river in Providence. We had, even in the rain, we had several hundred people come out, and we were doing things like pulling tires out of the river, cleaning up graffiti. It was an awesome event, you know. Mm. So one is the actual project itself, so doing the work. And then, you know, as you're doing the work, one of the hopes is that other companies are kind of seeing you do it so that it kind of motivates them to get involved. You know, you don't, it doesn't have to cost you crazy money. You could even – you don't have to run the entire cleanup. You can put a team together to participate in the cleanup, you know? Right. I mean, there's it's just getting involved itself. So that's one aspect of it. And that's why we originally really did it. But as you mentioned, there is a byproduct of doing the work itself. You know, there's a byproduct of doing the project. One, it obviously puts your company right off the bat in a certain light from an optics standpoint, if you will, in the community as they're seeing – our company grow over the years and get involved with a wide variety of these types of projects. The assumption is in looking at us that we're big enough to be able to give back. It's interesting, like from a strategic standpoint, just seeing who we're positioned with on one of these clamps. I'll use that as an example. So you'd see the back of these t-shirts everywhere. Mm-hmm. You see some of the biggest companies in the region. You'll see like CVS, like some of the biggest banks, et cetera. Then you'll see our company, you know?
Yeah.
So it kind of aligns you with all these big companies. So it kind of gives you the idea of how big of a company you are. And a lot of people are just motivated to be involved with companies and like to do business with companies that they believe are socially conscious. You know, that attracts a big amount of people from that mindset as well. One of the biggest reasons, though, that or biggest things that I found or biggest benefits from a marketing standpoint of getting involved with these cleanups is the networking opportunities that are involved with them. I'm a big believer in systems, and whatever you're doing in your business, whether it's your sales system, your marketing system, to existing clients or to new clients, everything has to have a system. And for me, I developed a networking system long time ago that has not only helped me when I go to like these big open networking events at say a chamber of commerce or mm-hmm. something along those lines, but has also helped me in networking with regard to a lot of the community events that we do, whether it's the actual organizers and leadership involved with the organizations that we're partnering with, or whether it's the people that you happen to meet at the events themselves.
So you mentioned, you know, you brought up this whole networking thing, and when I bring up networking and groups and chambers of commerce and all this other stuff, I hear a lot of resistance from guys. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like a bad rap. Oh, I'm going to go to another meeting, stand around and see the same 15 people, you know, that I see every month at this meeting, and it never does anything for my business. What do you tell that guy?
I tell them basically, you know, I appreciate what they're doing, but they're not really taking advantage of the opportunity because they're not that far different from a lot of other business owners and a lot of other industries that go to these networking events and do the same things. Basically, if you don't go into these networking events with a viable system in place in terms of how you can benefit from them, that's exactly what they're going to get out of it. You mm-hmm. get out of it what you put into it, you know? Yeah. And if these guys are going in there and they're just standing in the corner and not really kind of, you know, knowing what to do, then they're going to get the same kind of results that most other businesses that do the same thing get. I'll give one quick, you know, example. I mean, that was me years ago. I remember they have this big networking event where every Chamber of Commerce in the area kind of gets together. They call it the Statewide Business After Hours. And there's like 1,000 people at this event. And I remember the first time I went to that event, I walked in one door, looked around. I just fell in over my head, totally overwhelmed. My heart fell in my stomach. And I just kind of ran out the other door with my tail between my legs. Like, what the heck am I doing here? You know? And I, over a period of time, thank goodness, have developed a system. So, like, well, I go to one of these events now. We just had this same event within, I'd say, the last month or two over here. And I'll know probably 2/3 of the people in the room. And it's a totally different vibe.
So, the you know, the one thing that comes to mind when, you know, I'm picturing that guy, because I've been that guy too early. You know, I remember my first networking event. I walked in, I had all these business cards, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go get some business.
Yep.
And I think one thing I've learned is the last thing I'm trying to do now when I go to any networking event is get business.
Correct.
The first thing I'm trying to do is add value to somebody else.
And
I think that's what, you know, even the community service things that you do and the big cleanup you did. You know, I was taking some notes when you were talking, and basically there were three big things that popped into my mind about what you're doing. The first is that, you know, you're a company, you're different than all most of the other contractors in your area, because you're adding value back into the community, number one.
Yeah.
Consistently. You've been doing it for a long time. The second thing, second benefit that you touched on was that you're leveling up your relationships in the community. I mean, if you think about it, and I had remember I told you that story earlier about that competitor who was painting the exterior that I didn't get?
Yeah.
And of my customer. Well, we did way more quote-unquote marketing than this guy did. But the one thing, if I look back now, the one thing he did that was really smart is he got involved in ways like you are. And he always knew when the next new building was needing to be painted or built, or, you know, he was always on the inside of all these decisions.
Yeah.
And it's because he did a lot in the community. And because that's where the community leaders are. That's where the winners in the community are hanging out. And so you want to put yourself there and level up there. And the third thing that I heard over and over, because as we started doing charity projects and, you know, giving back and things like that, we'd go to a house and we'd ask, you know, hey, why did you choose us? And the consumers, the people in the community were, you know, saying things like, we just wanted to spend our money with a company that does stuff for our community.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted our money to stay here.
Absolutely.
And all this. So what advice do you give the contractor who's listening to this, or any small business owner for that matter, that's listening to this? And it's been in their mind for quite a while to give back to the community, get involved more and all this other stuff, but they just don't know where to start. They don't know where to begin. What's the low-hanging fruit for them?
I would say from these open networking events that you mentioned and that we talked about, to have a system in place that you can viably start to develop relationships stemming from these events, where just by a matter of getting to know people, that you're going to see opportunities that get waved in front of your eyes like big softballs that you can just grab. I'll give you a quick example.
Mm-hmm.
A number of years ago, I, through a relationship we built just from the different network initiatives that we had, I had a estimate with a client that had a pretty big project in a good part of the city that we do a lot of work in. She had mentioned, it just came up, that she was a member of a Girl Scout troop, that they're getting ready to paint a mural down on a main street right at the bottom of the hill where all these people from this neighborhood come every day. And they weren't quite sure how to go about getting the material they need for it. And I knew in my mind that they might need some help in terms of the preparation aspect of this thing to make sure this mural lasts as long as possible. So I was chomping at the bit to let this woman finish her sentence so I could say, we're going to give you everything you need, you know? And subsequently, we ended up aligning all the paint with one of our suppliers, prepping out the wall for them to do the Girl Scout mural. And we've done one other with them since. And every time we've done it, it's been this huge, big production in the city where the mayor will come down, they'll put us all over social media, et cetera. And these types of things happen when you get more and more involved with networking and really work on building relationships, because you never know when they're going to pop up. I mean, they pop up when you least expect it, really. I mean, the key is to build these relationships.
How do you you're a systems guy, so I'm going out on a ledge. A limb, right? You go out on a limb.
That's yeah. You want to go on a limb, not a ledge.
Tom.
Yeah, that's something different.
So I'm going to go out on a limb and say you have an answer for this. You know, building relationships like this, you don't just plant a seed and walk away from it. You have to water it.
Yep.
You know, you got to fertilize it. You got to pick the weeds. You got to get some sunshine on it. How do you fit the maintenance of these, the nurturing of these relationships into your life?
It's not as difficult as one may think. They, you know, a lot of people, they go to, I'll give you an example of a typical way I would go about doing it. Going back to this open networking dilemma that a lot of our people in our industry have, it's not magic. It doesn't happen overnight. But as you mentioned, you can cultivate your I call it our herd, you know. Mm-hmm. Picture your like a shepherd or kind of a farmer that farms cattle. You got to keep your herd together. And you grow them along to the points that you need to. Nobody escapes the herd. You want to make sure that you build a fence around them and nobody gets out of them. And your relationship building with regard to networking shouldn't be any different. What we do, like say I go to a typical open networking event.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, you're not looking to be business card guy, right? What does business card guy do? He goes to these events and just hands out business cards to everybody. He sees, hey, I own a painting company. I build fences. Here, take my car. Nah, that's not what you do. You're looking to add value to somebody else that's out there. So what I do when I go to one of these open networking things, there's two things. One, there's people there that I already know, and there's people there that I don't know. The people there that I already know, I make it a point to touch base with them just to say hi and just to kind of exchange pleasantries and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And just it's a touch point for that. But for the people I don't know, what I want to do is I go to these open networking events and I don't try to, you know, meet a billion people at one of these things. If I can meet one or two good contacts out of every networking event I go to, that's going to add up. I'll give you an example. If you go to one of these open networking events that happen a week, just one, over a period of a year, that's 52 contacts that you're adding to your database that previously did not exist. So say you're just making it, you want to add one contact a week that you're meeting on one of these events. It's going to compound over a period of time, and you're going to be amazed at what that's going to do for your business. Now, how do I meet these contacts, and how do I get them to the point that they do get cultivated? What I do is I would introduce myself to somebody that I think would be a good contact, or I know quite a number of people. And I'll just pick one or two who I think are most viable after I leave one of these events. And when you have a conversation with people, again, this whole process, you got to think about dating. You know, if you're dating somebody and you start saying hi to them and all your conversation is about yourself, that's not going to get you anywhere. If you keep the focus on the other person, they're going to get more and more interested in who you are and what you're all about. So I'll get the card from them after. You gotta take that first step, though. You gotta go up, introduce yourself, and just ask people who they are, what they're all about, what brought them to the event that night, etc. You gotta break the ice somehow, you know. So you get that initial contact. Then after the event, I'd reach out to them within the next day or so after that by email. I'll send them like an email to see if they would want to get together for a cup of coffee. Just tell them you thought that you had an interesting conversation and you love to learn more about them and their business and what it is they do every day. More, you know, 95% of the time, you're going to get an email back that these people want to meet with you, you know? So you set up a time to meet with them for coffee or lunch or whatever. I don't necessarily say you go too crazy. I usually do coffee or tea or et cetera, whatever, just for like an hour. Plan on like an hour, and you got to be kind of having a plan in place. You can't exceed an hour, but you kind of have to get in the system of doing this way. And I find it to be most optimal, about an hour to meet. And then when I meet with them, I have this mental acronym that I'm trying to get out of these people when I'm meeting with them. There's always the idea of what are you going to talk about, you know, and mm-hmm. the acronym's Ford, like the Ford Motor Company, and Ford stands for Family, Occupation, Recreation, and Dreams. So my goal at the end of an hour time when I meet with them for coffee or whatever it is that we're meeting is to know a bit about their family, know a bit about their occupation, what it is they do every day, know about their recreation, what they really like to do for fun, and know a bit about their dreams, what they really want to accomplish in life, whether it's personally, with the business, etc. And as long as you're not, you know, doing this like a questionnaire, like you're not drilling them like a drill sergeant, but you're making it a casual conversation, you'll be able to find out all this information about everybody that you meet. And the ironic part, the funny thing about this whole thing, Tom, is that at the end of this conversation, they're going to think you're the greatest person in the world, even if all you did was not tell them anything about yourself, because they got to talk about themselves for an hour and somebody was really listening to them.
Yeah, and that's their favorite topic too, is themselves.
Everybody's favorite topic is themselves. Right. Are you kidding me? That's great, right. You know?
They walk away feeling like, you know, they really connected with you and all that. So
exactly.
And that's awesome stuff, man. So let me ask you this. When you
did I say one more thing before you jump into it?
Absolutely.
All right. You can't stop there though. Like and I'll make this quick so you can get on to the next point. But that's after right. you do leave that conversation, you got to follow up with them. You can't just leave it there. Follow-up's the key. You got to send them a personalized thank you card within a day or so after you do it, handwritten, hand-addressed, everything. Send that to them, and then you get them into what you would call, what we call our existing relationship massage process, where you get them into that database with everybody that gets that monthly newsletter, etc. But the follow-up's key. But I want to make sure I plug that in there. Go ahead. You can whatever you're going to ask me.
No,
sorry.
You take as much time as you need, man. This is all about you. So, yeah, what I love about the handwritten card thing is again, it's unique. It's different. You're not, you're differentiating in a world where most people are, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but I go to a networking event and, you know, if I ever give somebody my card, you know, I've got like a ton of emails coming from that person asking me to buy crap, you know, yeah, and right? I'm just not interested in that. So this whole approach is much different and it's much more relational than anything else. So have you seen what impact has this relationship building in your community had on your pricing over the years?
Oh, it's huge. Pricing is we're right now, I would say, gun to my head, I can't think of another contractor whether in our industry, which is the painting and repair industry around here, that charges more than we do for what we do. And if we did, I'd be mad because I'd want to know what they're charging so we could charge higher. Mm-hmm. It's all adds up. All this impacts because we're so unique and nobody else does everything, the approach to things, we're on another end of the scale than a lot of the guys. Be a lot of times in our industry, and I appreciate that they mean well what they do.
Yeah.
But they're trying to, okay, they're worried about whether the person's going to pay X amount for them or if they're going to lose a bid to this one or that one due to the price. That's negligible with us. We don't position ourselves that way. You know, we in all this stuff, doing the stuff in the community, our sales process, et cetera, all adds up to giving our client a clear understanding of why we're priced out or where we're at, and kind of helps them lead to a decision as to why we're really the right one for them to go with whatever project they happen to be talking to us about.
Yeah, and you nailed it. It's all about positioning, you know, through good content, through relationships in the community, through, you know, adding value to the community through these events and giving back. You're elevating yourself above all the other contractors in your area. And in turn, you've positioned yourself as a higher level guy to where they don't expect the prices to be low. And heck, even the couple hoops you have people jump through just to get a bid with you guys is different. So I want to talk kind of on the backside slope of our interview here, coming downhill now. I want to talk a little bit about how you ended up being a little bit of celebrity recently.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. You know, because your face and voice is all over the place now.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's interesting. There's a guy out there who, if people listening to this are not listening or following, I suggest they do. Not saying that you have to do everything this guy says, but he's a very interesting personality. His name's Gary Vaynerchuk, and I know you're a big fan of his too. Mm-hmm. And he has a video out there that he made that's called Overnight Success. And basically the idea behind the video is that Gary right now is about 40 years old and people see him everywhere. He runs like a 500 person company. It's a huge, huge advertising media outlet. And people think this guy just succeeded overnight a lot of times because they're seeing him headline conferences. He's like a keynote speaker everywhere they look. And he makes very valid points in this particular video that a lot of entrepreneurs across industries can really relate to, in that overnight success isn't really overnight. I have had the opportunity right now to give people that maybe listen to this to be featured in a lot of different areas. One is, I'll give you some quick examples that you had mentioned. There's the local CBS affiliate, Channel 12. I'm the home improvement guy every weekend on the their local the Saturday news. There's a AM radio, talk radio, WPRO AM. I'm their home improvement tip guy every morning with their main host in their morning news, giving a home improvement tip. Dan Dale Weekly. We're featured in a number of columns in a number of different magazines where I'm writing different pieces in – et cetera, et cetera. And it didn't happen overnight. It's in each of these kind of stems from another reason behind why it's happening, but it all seems like it's happening all at the same time. And a lot of people think that, wow, I mean, this guy came from nowhere and look at him and this and that. And it's not the case. It's all because of roots of things that I've done over a long period of time. And just looking at for the right opportunities, and they all seem kind of like that. They happen at once, and that's what it is. There's a book out there by a guy named Darren Hardy, who I think it's Success Magazine. He's behind it. It's called The Compound Effect.
Yep.
And basically, it's your efforts, for better or worse, over a long period of time, are going to result in something. You know, I mean, if you've made a bunch of bad decisions over a period of time, those are going to compound and you're going to find yourself in a challenging position, whether it's in your business life or your personal life at some point in time. But if you do the opposite, if you are able to make good decisions over a long time, a long period of time, if they outweigh some of the you know, missteps that we take, if you keep doing that, you keep making the right decisions, doing things here and doing things there, it's kind of like an interest rates and compounding. And eventually it's just going to explode into this craziness that it can be really, really good for you if you're making those decisions the right way there.
Big time, man. I'm so glad you brought that up with the Compound Effect and with Gary V. You know, side note here, I want Gary V on the show here. I want to interview him and talk what he would do if he were a contractor.
That'd be great.
In this new marketing world that we're in. You know, one of his big things is market, like, you know, market in the year that you live in.
Correct.
And that's what you're doing, man. You're out there, you're going where the eyeballs are. And where the ears are, and that's why we do podcasts, and that's why we do these videos. I mean, if you go to, you know, Tom, if we go to your website, you know, and you go to your about page, you see some videos and stuff like that. I mean, I know you get it, and but again, it's not like you did videos or, you know, wrote articles for 2 months, then all of a sudden now you're on these bigger platforms. It's been many years of slugging away. And you kept at it when honestly most people give up. So hats off to you, man.
Thank you.
So listen, as we kind of wrap this up, I have two final questions. I guess the one is, what would the Tom who started this business, what, 22 years ago?
Yeah.
What would he think of what you've built now?
I think he'd be pretty proud. I think a lot of where we're at today is aligned with visions that I had back then. Although when you set out to do something, Mike Tyson had maybe one of the greatest lines of all time, where he said that everybody makes all these big plans of how they're going to do this and how they're going to do that, but all those plans go out the window once you step in the ring and you're punched in the mouth, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how life is, right? I mean, back when I was 22 years ago, I envisioned kind of being where we're at now, really. But the plans of where I thought I was going to take the roads and the this and that, I had all these big, gigantic ways in terms of how we're going to do that. But then that changes once you get out there, put the ladder on the house, and you start getting punched in the mouth a bit, you know?
Yeah. We rarely take the route that we think we're going to take. That's for sure. But it also, I also believe that, I think I got this a long time ago. I either wrote a blog or did a video on this. I forget. I think it was called, basically the point was you don't become the leader that you were meant to be until you've had your nose bloodied a few times.
Same thing, bro. Yep.
You know? And so, all right, well, listen, my last question for you is, you got one minute to give anything that's in your head to, you know, the contractors that are listening out there. You know, like, these are like your, not like your dying words in real life, you know, with your family and stuff, but like your last words to contractors about anything that you want. What comes to mind? I'm just going to shut up for about a minute and let you talk.
Sure. I think everybody out there who's in a contractor, from what I've seen and just from what I've lived, has the struggle every year of how they're going to get to where they want to be, whether it's, you know, not having to worry about making things ends meet over the winter, to having the freed up time in their life to do this or do that, etc. But everything really comes down to the systems that you put in place to get to where you want to be. I mean, the biggest thing you got to do, there's a guy named Cameron Herold out there. He had a book that he wrote called Double Double, I believe. And he talks about this thing called the painted picture. What you really got to do is figure out what you want your life to be. Do you want that extra free time? Do you want the money over the winter? Do you want this? Do you want that? Figure out that all out. You know, get it on paper and think about that. And then what you got to do is what they call reverse engineer how you're going to get there. And that's where you could kind of plug in these different systems that you know you got to get in place to accomplish your painted picture. And it's going to be different for everybody, but systemizing to get you to where you want to be after you can answer that question, where you want to be, is the biggest thing that anybody can do to really get them to a life that they're most comfortable in living.
You know, dude, that's so fitting, you know, for the contractor world, because, you know, we go into a project and we have a plan. You know, hey, we're going to paint the ceiling first, then we're going to do this, then we're going to do this. You know, if you're a home builder or remodeler, you have a plan, and then you execute the plan. And I think the biggest thing I hope people heard from what you just said, if they really listen, is that you are in control of how this business ends up.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
It's your baby. You're in control. And it's not the economy. And side note here, if I hear one more guy tell me that they're, you know, not doing well because the economy took a dump several years ago, then they need to quit and go work at Home Depot.
Right.
And that was my plug for Home Depot, so maybe they'll sponsor me now. But anyway.
There you go.
But, you know, the economy is not why your business is struggling. Your guys are not why your business is struggling. Okay? Lack of leads is not why your business is struggling. Your business is struggling or winning because of you.
Yeah,
you are in control. And in the world that we live in, there's so many opportunities and resources and people to mentor us and all this other stuff to get the help that we need and all that. So, Tom, man, first of all, I super appreciate you hanging with us today. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, if they want to have you on their show, if another TV station wants you on, whatever, how do they get a hold of you?
I encourage them to do one of two things. Either reach out to our office on our phone number at 401-270-2664, or email our office at info@lopcocontracting.com. That's L-O-P as in Peter, C-O, contracting.com.
Awesome. And which social media network do you use the most?
Me personally, I'm a big fan of Facebook.
All right, man. So look for Tom on Facebook as well. And you know, take some things that, man, if somebody just takes one thing from the way that you approach, you know, marketing and connecting with people here, I know that they're going to have a big ROI on it that's positive down the road, man. So, Tom, I appreciate you hanging with me today, man.
Thanks so much, Tom. It's been fun.
All right. Hey, good luck with that cheer school, too.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right.
I take as much luck as I can with that.
All right. If you enjoyed this episode of the Strongpreneur Podcast, you know, this is the place where you get to build an uncommon contracting business, then please do us a favor. Head over to iTunes. Go to iTunes, probably just how you found this thing, and give us a rating and a review. It means so much to us because it enables us to get the message of how to build a stronger contracting business out to so many more people when we get good ratings, good reviews. Share this with a contractor that you know and help them get their business, build their business a little bit stronger, you know, by something that they're going to hear on this podcast from one of the many experts that we have come on here. So again, thank you for tuning in today. Thanks for making us a part of your commute or your time at the job site or whatever the heck you're doing. I know you have a lot of options, a lot of choices out there for what to stick in your ear each day. And I appreciate you guys for taking time to listen to this show and look forward to continue to be able to add more and more stuff that will help you grow stronger. We'll see you around.